I am in a neighborhood, Rob, that, and I mentioned this yesterday, when there is a breeze, when somebody sneezes the wrong way, we lose power.
We never lost power growing up, and we had our share of bad weather. Now it's just, well, everything's just built to break it.
Yeah, I think so many more people on the grid, too. I think somehow it has an effect.
And not to mention a grid that hasn't been updated since the Ford administration.
I will say that I was downstairs watching the Thursday night football game, and I go up right before halftime, and you can hear the rain a lot more when you're upstairs, obviously, because you're closer to the roof. And then I did hear the wind starting to howl a little bit, almost like a whistle. And I was like, uh-oh. But it was raining pretty heavy when I went to bed last night. In fact, I thought it had stopped raining when I woke up in the middle of the night because it was raining so much lighter.
You sound like that person they interviewed after a tornado. Sound like a freight train.
Yeah, it did.
Choo-choo!
Yeah, man. Well,
but driving in this morning, I honestly thought we were going to get heavy, heavy winds at 3 or 4 in the morning. Did not. It does look like it'll be here in an hour or so, or maybe two, and then once the rain is out around noon, they are expecting some heavy winds for a couple hours.
Wind's going to just blow it out up into South Carolina, I guess.
Which is good. It'll blow off that grass at Truist.
It's actually going the other way, Rob, which has been a concern. Yeah, it's going northwest, which is
Tennessee?
Nuts. It's like headed towards like Nashville area and then Kentucky, which is the only reason I say that is because I think it's important for a lot of people that if it's going through Nashville, that those storms don't circle back around to Tuscaloosa and Alabama tomorrow.
Right.
And a lot of people got their eyes on that as well. And obviously want people to stay safe, but that's one of the reasons I've tracked it northwest because it's not typically moving northeast.
Wait, hold on a second. You've tracked it northwest.
Meteorologist Mike Johnson.
Do you have a radar screen at home that you're...
I've been just keeping an eye on what I think this weather's going to do because of all the sports-related stuff and everything we talk about, man. So,
I'm sorry. I wasn't meaning to be a jerk, but you're like, that's one of the reasons why, Rob, I have tracked it northwest.
It is funny. It is funny.
You went weatherman
like
mode.
But we do have I am now talking to a guy that gives himself credit for everything in here. So it is funny that I can't say I'm tracking the storm, right? So there we go.
I'm sorry, by the way, no, Dylan, you gotta pull that. Pull that where he goes, that's one of the reasons, Rob, why I have tracked it northwest. At the Mike's Mafia headquarters of the weather team.
I remember back in the day, remember old Ken Cook at Fox 5?
I remember Ken Cook and his mustache, too.
You knew it was something, though, if he's in the weather office with his jacket off and his sleeves rolled up. He's going to work for you.
Was it me or...
It's like we can't pull you away from the desk long enough to do this, so
no,
we're just going to do
urgent.
It right here.
Can't do it.
Just turn around and look over my shoulder.
Didn't Ken Cook look like he might have been on a Spanish boat, maybe exploring the Americas back in the 1500s?
Went to college with his daughter in West Georgia. She was really cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't even know
Fun
that.
Girl.
I didn't know that he had a daughter our age. I remember when he retired.
Yep.
It doesn't feel like it was that long ago, honestly.
And we have Linda Stouffer, anchoring action, who's always been a big fan of her. Back when her name used to be Cinnamon Stouffer when she was at CNN.
I remember Karen Mitten.
Yep.
I was a Karen Mitten.
She was
Mitten
always
fan.
Pregnant. Karen Mitten was pregnant for 25 years when she was on the air, it seemed like.
Not even going to follow up on that. I'm just going to let it go. So they might play baseball tonight.
I think they're likely going to play baseball tonight. Yeah, this stuff's moving out. So
there we go.
Braves and Royals, big series this weekend.
I think the wind, too, is going to help. You know, that's one of the things playing a lot of golf these days. Whenever there's wind after rain, you always feel good about it because it will just disperse that water and make it, you know, get the puddles out of there. Looks like Max Fried's going tonight against the Royals. What do you think about this strategy that they're using, guys, where I guess they're going to kind of save Chris Sale for when they think that when it could be an elimination.
And believe me,
game.
Chris Sale had some input in that too.
I believe that as well.
Of course he did.
Yeah, no, and we talked about it yesterday. It's like, man, is it fair to, you know, kind of keep these guys hanging on and approach them on the day of a game, right? Or on the morning of a game or after the game the night before and say, okay, you're up. And I was like, man, I don't know if that's fair or not. You kind of split the middle if you're Snit, right? You kind of did a little bit of both. It's like, I'm going to tell all these guys when they're pitching, except you, Chris Sale, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to prepare you that you're going to go whenever we freaking need you.
And
so
plus,
I love
if you're facing like an elimination, all hands on deck.
Always.
So. Well, I do believe that Max Fried went in and said, I just assume stay on regular rest. Remember, he was the one guy that every time he was approached by the media or asked about the media with the six-man kind of the six-day rotation or six-man rotation, whatever you want to phrase it, he always said, yeah, I kind of like going every fifth day. It's kind of my habit, and I enjoy staying in my routine, which I have no issue with.
No, he's also trying to optimize what his outing could potentially be because, you know, he's going to be looking for a contract, probably from the Dodgers.
Don't underestimate the Mets' spending power.
Yeah. I also heard Orioles, yeah. A couple of people.
And Grant
put
said
out,
yesterday the Dodgers have dumped a lot of money in their starting pitching. So.
Well, not only that, you played Ohtani and yeah. everybody else.
Right.
I was going to say they got a Cy Young Award winner or Mookie potential Betts. Cy Young winner coming back right. next year from Tommy John.
Yeah. But, Max Fried will not be here next year.
No. Well, no. And if you, it's nice to hold on to the hope. But when people tell you how they do business or who they are, if you don't listen, it's on you. And they have told you, this team has told you, no one will defend Alex Anthopoulos as much as me.
And he appreciates that, too.
But what he's told you, Rob, I'm sure it does, but what he's told you is when a guy gets to free agency, he will not meet that market value that they're going to get. And market value as a free agent and a guy that's closed out a World Series and been dominant like Max Fried has is going to tell you he's going to get paid top dollar, just like Dansby and Freddie did.
And plus, Max Fried has his injury history as well, and that's going to throw a wrench into the negotiations in a lot of ways, as far as Alex Anthopoulos goes.
I don't know that it will. I mean,
I think it totally does.
But it's just funny to me, you look around guys there's guys that have come off Tommy John. Heck, we talked about the Dodgers. Which one's the Dodgers pitcher that hadn't even thrown for them this year? So
Shohei Ohtani is one of the guys.
Well, that's a good point, too. But, you know, you talk about some of the players that are coming off injuries and doing other things. It just, if you can pitch, you can pitch. You're going to make a lot of money. It just... And going back to it, too, I do love the fact that he has basically told Chris Sale that you're going to go in the high-leverage situation. His demeanor, and we talked to Smoltz about this the other day, because his demeanor is a lot like John Smoltz, mm-hmm. right? He's kind of got that Max Scherzer just bulldog mentality about right. him on the mound, right. which is awesome to watch. So I think if you're a Braves fan and you're lining up, and obviously there's some good options, but you're lining up Chris Sale with that bulldog mentality to go in that game with everything on the line, it's going to be nice to watch.
And I saw the narrative already being pushed, and I think it was from last night, and said, and I think it's interesting and always important to put the, you know, talk about all these things. Well, they don't make the playoffs, and Sale doesn't get to pitch in a meaningful game again. They're going to be second guessed. And I just sat there and I thought about it for a second, and I go, no. They're really not, because I think when you look back on this season, you're going to say, hold on a second, the Braves lost Riley for a quarter of the season. They lost Albies for at one point a quarter of the season. They lost Acuna for almost the entire season. They lost this guy. They lost Spencer Strider for the entire season. They lost so-and-so for Michael Harris for over a quarter of the season.
Well, Kranick, the pitching coach.
Yeah, he's been gone.
Whatever issues. He's been gone.
I think some family stuff maybe. Yeah. I don't want to speculate, but I know there's family issues. I remember hearing
the reason.
The
absurdity of it when he's not even around, too.
Yeah, and I think they're going to say, and you're telling me they had a weather issue that cost them days in a pivotal series. And you're going to tell me they went into the final five games and they had a chance to make it and they decided to make a decision that the pitcher was in on? No. No one's going to say that. No one is going to question that. What they're going to say is, what a phenomenal job by this front office and coaching staff to get them to this point.
And the cast-offs, too, the rejects. Mm-hmm. Credit to them for coming in, at least keeping the ship above water. All right, we're going to come back. The battle of battered offensive lines will... culminate on Sunday at 1 o'clock inside Mercedes-Benz. Falcons Saints preview coming up next. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 929 Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, morganandmorgan.com. Well, you want to know what the definition of a rivalry is? Well, you play every year. There's a lot of vitriol, and it's been competitive. Sunday's going to be the 111th meeting between the Falcons and Saints. The Saints have won 55. The Falcons have won 55, gentlemen. So there
blow
you go.
Blow for blow.
Blow for blow.
Heavyweight titans going at it in the history of
last
football.
Last man standing. Loser leaves town.
The most grand franchises in the history of the NFL.
And also battered offensive lines, too.
Yeah, that's what worries me. A guy I wanted last year in the draft, Brian Brzee from Clemson.
Yes.
I think he's a hell of a player. He's obviously a good kid. He's dealt with some stuff in college with
his sister. Passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. He's what he and Carl Granderson worry me in this game. I know that obviously, you know, Cam Jordan has been that guy for a long time. He's obviously maybe lost a little bit, but their defensive line is sneaky good. I think you can run on their defensive line, but when it comes back to pass rush, that they worry me up front. I think it's going to be interesting to me how you can run the ball without Drew Dahlman in the game and Caleb McGarry. If you can still effectively run Mike on them and neutralize in any way that their pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny because, you know, whoever starts at right tackle is going to have to deal with Cameron Jordan. And, you know, he kind of slides in and out and does a number of different things. Kind of like we talked about Chris Jones, but I don't think to that quite extent. But, you know, it's funny. We turn on film, Rob, this morning, and the first third down, we're like, oh, where's Cam Jordan? He's not in there. It's Granderson and Chase Young that are rushing the passer.
That was the third down, right?
Yeah, that was third down. So it was just it's interesting to see how they've, you know, continued to utilize him as he's gotten a little longer in the tooth. He's definitely a heck of a football player still, but much in the way that you would have seen like Calais used here last year, he kind of caps that tackle, you know, to the tight end side and doing over different things, but still a good player. But you're right. I think Carl Granderson is he's the dude-io. Like, you know, when we highlight with TJ Watt and whoever else on these defenses and say, man, that's the guy. Granderson's the straw that stirs the drink, and I think that's one of the guys you have to have your eyes on if you're Atlanta and you're having these offensive line injuries.
Well, what about the Saints? Oh, Eric McCoy's out, their best O lineman, and you know they're running the ball very well until he went out. Now they're averaging about 3 yards a carry since he's been gone, so that's had an effect on him.
That's where I want to see David Onyemata kind of be that guy, and I know that he and Eddie Goldman can they stuff the middle there with that run. And obviously Grady Jarrett, I mean, do you run more stunts this week, Mike? Do you kind of try to abuse that? Maybe Grady coming in and running a stunt, kind of moving in there and attacking McCoy? Because what they've done is they've moved Lucas Patrick inside, and then we saw last week, and I'm sure it's probably going to be a similar plan, and he's going to be the guy that moves into left guard.
Nice job.
And I know I finally got it. It only took me 5 days.
Oladu.
Nice. But and I literally have to look at the phonetic spelling, phonetically how it's spelled or as pronounced, like to get that word out.
Do his full name though, Olasemeka.
Well, you just did it for me.
Olasemeka.
Yeah, Semeka.
Olasemeka.
Odo. Oh, anyway, so now we've stopped because doing names, but the reality of the situation is what mismatches can we create inside? Could maybe Zach Harrison have an impact this week because of that?
Well, and he's so interesting to me because it's like I've mentioned you a couple times, we don't have much length. You know, it's not just size. We don't have much length, and that leads to leverage, right? When you have length, you have leverage. It's much in the way if I wanted to go, you know, tell you to push the door open, you're not going to stand up straight and hit it with your chest. You lean into it and get nice leverage and get flat to the ground and everything else. So he is an intriguing part of this entire ordeal, and obviously you have not been good against the run the last few weeks.
27th on the run, yeah.
Yeah, and it's bad. So it's weird because Bo and I talked about this, Rob. I honestly find our defense up front to be a lot like the offense has been, you know, or at least was in week one. It's almost very vanilla, and you're still kind of figuring out what your defense can do and can't do. Now, the great equalizer in run defense is when you have undersized guys. And look no further, like if you were if you were watching Georgia-Kentucky a couple weeks ago, Kentucky did a good job of this. You start moving side to side. It's the great equalizer. Like, I'm not going to sit here. If I'm not 6'5 and 320, I'm not going to sit here and try to stand up to these double teams. So you do start moving a little more side to side. And I think that's one of the intriguing things that are probably at the fingertips of Jimmy Lake in this defense. I don't know that they go to that yet, and I don't think that they change much of what they're doing. I think they want to settle into some of these division games and see how they do against this style of offense before they start making changes like run stunts and other things. But I think you do have to start sprinkling that in because I don't think you have those guys right now up front that are just going to simply squat on a double team other than Eddie Goldman. But he's not a three-down player. So.
And one thing I saw that impressed me last week, and it's the first time I've seen all year this guy kind of flash, it was Taquan Graham. Yeah. I saw multiple times last week, and that's a good offensive line. Look, I know that Kansas.
Well, he blew up a couple of plays. He got penalized on the second one.
But yeah, hold on a second. That was a terrible call.
Yeah,
that wasn't defensive holding. How do you call it again? He beat a double team on that play. He wasn't. And the refs were garbage last night, too, in that game.
I was just happy to see him flash, though.
But I was, too, and that's a good offensive line. I know we talked about Wanye Morris coming in for the rookie, Kingsley Sumate. But Juwan Taylor, I'm not a big fan, but because of what he did at Florida, he was always a penalty. But Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, and Joe Tooney, those are really good interior offensive linemen. I thought T.Q. Graham played well against last week.
Yeah, I did too, and he started to flash. And you talk about length; he actually is probably one of the longer guys. He's listed at 6'4". There's a couple of guys on this defensive roster that we have that I don't agree with, like, half their heights. There's just no freaking way. All right, you're not going to tell me that Eddie Goldman is 6'3" and that Zach Harrison's 6'5". Like, that's not a 2-inch height difference, bro. Like, there's just no way. David Onyemata's not 6'4". Let's just throw that out there too. You got Grady Jarrett listed at 6', and David Onyemata's 6'4". No, it's not.
No, I'm saying Grady Jarrett.
Yeah, yeah. Well, his is definitely accurate. Grady, I don't Jarrett's think accurate. That you're not going to tell me David Onyemata's 4 inches taller than Grady Jarrett either. So it is. I think T.Q. Graham's one of the bigger bodies when you look at this defense. I think he's an intriguing part of this entire thing because, look, I think you look at Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, and everything else that goes into this defensive front, and those are good players. But you have to find a way to have bigger bodies and continue to anchor down against when you have, like we did against the Eagles 2 weeks ago, a 360-pound left tackle, a 330-pound left guard, and some of the other players you're going against. So they're going to have to find different ways to stand up to the run because it looked like they were completely overmatched last week against that Chiefs O-line.
What do you guys think about A.J. Terrell D-off? You got to go against Chris Olave. You've got Rashid Shaheed as well. That could be an issue. And, Alford and A.J. Terrell, they've been – gashed a little bit.
Well, AJ was great last week.
He was.
But they didn't go after. They didn't target him much. They targeted Hughes and Alford last week with Rashee Rice. I think Mike Hughes has been phenomenal, Rob, so far. I think he's done everything you've asked him to do. I think AJ's been pretty good. Look, you just got to – Mike, what did you tell me yesterday that this defense has been in a majority of the time? What defense did
cover
you tell
three.
Me?
Cover three. Cover three a lot.
So – there have been cover three.
Cover three, 49% of the passing downs, which is a big number. Like top five in the NFL.
And am I wrong that when you play that cover three, you basically play that with a safety that's kind of an eraser, right? To kind of save you from that. That was what it was kind of here when DQ was here, to kind of save you from that. If that big play happens over the top, you've got somebody that can kind of save you there.
Yeah, and you'll do different things that usually cover three, in my opinion. I'm sure there's some defensive coach out there that's telling me I'm wrong. Cover three, in my opinion, it opens up a lot of the kind of underneath crossing routes, things like that, because you are in that cover three shell and those corners are kind of backing off a little bit.
Keeping everything in front of you.
Right, keeping everything in front of you. But it, to your point, and I want to make sure we go this route too, these corners in doing that, in cover three, keeping everything in front of you, you're still doing extremely well against the pass in terms of your overall ranking in the NFL, right? And you're doing that without much pass rush in front of you so far. So I think the secondary, in my opinion, has been nothing short of incredible when you look at everything that goes into it. When you're so bad against the run, you're so bad at rushing the passer, and yet all your passing stats are in the top, 11, 12 in the NFL, that's because every guy in the secondary has stepped up.
Let's hear from Jesse Bates on bending, not breaking.
I think this last game we had probably a couple 15-plus play drives where I don't think we were that good on third down last game. I think they converted. That goes back to getting these guys out of third and two, third and one, making it longer, third and longer distances. But I think we've done a really good job of responding in the red zone, of keeping guys out and forcing guys to kick field goals and keeping us in the game as well. So, there's a balance of that. You want to be top 10, top 5 and everything, but those stats will come as long as we continue to do our job and continue to get turnovers and play good defense.
And that's why I brought up that's why I'm about to bring up Cesar Ruiz, who did not practice yesterday for the second straight day. Does he practice today for them? They could essentially have three guys playing, three backups essentially playing in the middle of their line. I know that Lucas Patrick's a starter, but at center he's not. He's a backup there. It's a little bit out of sorts for him. I still think he'll play okay, but can this line swell up, shut down the run, and if there is as good against the deep stuff that they've as the secondary has been so far, you can keep everything in front of you. You might get in on third and longs where you get off the field.
Well, and too, I want to highlight this, and we've talked about this a couple of times. The Saints offensive line, there is not an analyst in the NFL realms that would have ranked them outside of the bottom 10 of offensive lines coming into the year. You didn't know what you had in rookie Talese Fuaga. Ryan Ramczyk was on the fence, and we know that he's not playing this year. Cesar Ruiz has had his ups and downs. He has struggled at times. Trevor Penning, good in the passing game, not great in the run game. Now you start taking shots at that offensive line. Now they start having guys leave with injury. I wonder if, because they were phenomenal the first couple of weeks.
Yep.
But now you start getting into these situations where all of a sudden you're not allowed to be the aggressor in the run game, right? Because you don't have the guys. Now all of a sudden a guy like Trevor Penning at right tackle is forced to pass protect. Now a rookie in Talese Fuaga, who is phenomenal, by the way, but is forced to pass protect because you're not running very well on first and second down. Now I think we're about to find out a lot about what the real Saints offense looks like this week.
All right, going to come back. 7:30 tomorrow night, Tuscaloosa, Georgia, Alabama. I've got two concerns regarding the Georgia Bulldogs. Coming up next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 1990 Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Georgia, two-point favorite in Tuscaloosa tomorrow night at 7:30. The over and under, 48.5, if you're interested in such things. And a little bit of history between these two teams. You know, Vince Dooley's first signature victory came over Bear Bryant, 1965, after Alabama won the national championship, ran a trick play, which Dooley was known to do every once in a while, and that was his first signature victory early in his tenure, and of course, there's been some back and forth since then. They haven't played enough, though.
Yeah, they definitely haven't, man. I've been lucky enough to be in this matchup a couple times as a player, and so, you know, it is interesting when you look at this game.
We're all getting the flash flood warnings on our phones.
Yeah,
I got one this morning as I was on the express lane. My phone starts vibrating. And I go, It says, "Do not attempt to travel unless you're fleeing an area." I'm like, "Well, I kind of am. I'm fleeing home to get to work."
Sorry, Mike. Go ahead. Keep going.
No. I mean, I think it's important to talk about. I said the same thing. I was like, you know, Sandy Springs is being evacuated. I was like, yeah, I'm evacuating to work to Midtown. No, man, but I think when you look at this game, it is interesting because the implied totals, I guess, Rob, when you look at the over-under and the spread, it's like 23-25.5, right? That's what you would think, supposedly Vegas thinks the final score is going to be. I would argue that neither of these offenses or these fan bases would be okay with those totals. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels – like, if Bama scores 23 in the game, I'm going to feel very bad about the offense. And I think Georgia fans would tell you if they're able to score 25 in the game, it's like this doesn't feel like a team that's doing what they can offensively.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? When you have a Heisman Trophy candidate, number one overall draft pick at quarterback, you have Etienne at running back, and you have some of the things that you have, it just seems like you should be scoring more points than that. I feel that way about Jalen Milroe and this Alabama offense with the offensive line they have.
Well, I think it's scary because – look what Brock Vandergrift did against Georgia a couple of weeks ago. He rushed for 70 yards, and he's not Jalen Milroe. He's
right.
Clearly pretty athletic, but this is certainly an issue.
Yeah, I think though too, what we saw in Kentucky is nothing that is not unlike anything we've ever seen in Kirby Smart's era going to Kentucky. Every time they go there, when Stoops is there, they find a game plan. If they play the game in Athens, it might have been 45
right.
to 10.
Somebody going up there, they're feisty up there. It's feisty.
It's just I understand the concerns. I really do. And I'm not saying Georgia's going to win Saturday. I'm not saying that they're the greatest team ever assembled. All I'm saying is I take the Kentucky game and I take a piece of paper and I wad it up and I throw it out because that's how it goes sometimes. Styles make fights, the matchups, the coaching staffs. You know, Mark Stoops, whether we want to give him credit or not, is a hell of a coach and a defensive coach at that. Carson Beck is still that dude that we saw last year.
A lot of people are starting to think otherwise in a way.
I think those people
can't win the big one.
I think those people are just they're the same people that when the strokes go, well, you know, he might be firing a coach soon. Oh, he lost one game. We might have to fire him because they don't know what they're watching or they just want to play the I want to be lazy and overreact. The guy lost Brock Bowers.
Ladd McConkey.
Multiple running backs. He lost Ra-Ra Smith, who was there last year, or Thomas, excuse me, who's been kicked off the team because he can't keep things out of straight. So he's lost multiple guys, and he's learning all of these new guys. They did get off to a slow start against Clemson, but I think Clemson's a lot better than we're giving them credit for.
Clemson's pretty good.
I think we just need to relax a little bit and say, you know what? They've had two pretty damn good opponents, one of which on the road, the other in neutral field. This is not an easy matchup, but I don't think it's time to just hit the panic button. And I know y'all aren't, but it feels like we are a little bit with some people talking about this team, with Carson Beck anyways.
I think it's always just a natural reaction because a lot of Bama fans kind of feel the same way. Like, you know, this is a make or break for Kalen DeBoer. No, it's not, dude. It's his fourth game in Alabama. Like, it's not make or break. But I'm with you. I will say this, though. I think a lot of what Carson Beck and let me preface it with this. I would take Carson Beck number one overall. As it sits right now, I would take him to Warner. So I really, really like him as a quarterback and as a prospect. I will say this, though. As an offense, a lot of the yardage they did compile last year was because of the great players that he was getting the ball to. And you get a nice downfield block. They had such gritty downfield blocking at Georgia that you're able to turn, you know, Ladd McConkey's able to turn those into explosive. Brock Bowers, the screen plays, turn them into explosives. I don't know that you found that guy yet offensively, and I think Georgia fans would completely agree with me that you have to find that downfield weapon. You know, they have a number of players, but I don't think they've identified that guy to be able to kind of break it loose in those big game situations.
Well, it seems like interior of their offensive line has been good. Now you're without Tate Rattledge. Seems like there's some questions at tackle. How much are you going to miss him?
Well, according to Rusty, and we've talked to him a number of times now about this because the Rattledge surgery was announced a while back, or you know, last week.
Yeah, explain tightrope surgery.
So what it is essentially, Rob, is when you have a high ankle sprain, there is separation of the tibia and the fibula with the foot, like, so everything kind of expands and swells outwards, and it takes a while for the ligaments to kind of shrink back down into place and to kind of tighten that entire joint up. And what you do is you have just a, you know, slightly invasive procedure that you go in and you put holes through the tibia and the fibula, and you put this rope through it essentially and kind
zip
of
tie.
Tighten it up. Yeah,
a
you
zip
kind
tie
of exactly like a metal zip. And I've got one in my foot. I still have one in my foot that's a tight rope. So you go in and it kind of just speeds up the ligament, you know, healing process to where it's about a third of the amount of time. So that's what he's dealing with. It'll get him back on the field faster. But back to your original question about how it affects the game, I think Georgia fans and the Georgia coaching staff have a lot of belief in the young man that will be playing right guard. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I watched his film last week against Kentucky, and I think he is a good player, but he's not Tate Rattledge. Right, Tate Rattledge is a day one starter in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So there will be some concern when it comes to that. But I think it's awesome for both of these guards that you had a bye week and you got to kind of get those reps next to the players you will be playing against in that game, and you can kind of move forward like that. I think that was it's not great to have Tate Rattledge out, but the timing of it is pretty good considering all things.
I think it's Micah Morris that's going to step in for Tate Rattledge. I just think what I'm trying to say is, you know, you lose Georgia is at the point of the program where they're losing key players every year. I mean, key players. And you're having to refine that chemistry and stuff. I mean, we've seen it kind of with
I think that's the word, chemistry. You're getting the guys with the pedigree, but it's all about the chemistry and cultivating that.
You got what is it? London? Is it London Humphreys?
Yeah. He's got mono though. He's not playing.
Yeah, but he's a guy that we saw when he had him in that first game against Clemson. He looked pretty good.
Like, he came from Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Yes,
did.
Or Vanderbilt, depending on who's pronouncing it. But like it's. I just think it takes time, and I'm not saying, again, this Alabama team is going through some of the same things. They lost not only players, they lost more starters actually off their front offense and defense, but they're going through a new coach. There are issues, but
for sure,
it just has to give time. But this is what we get. Kirby Smart is the highest paid coach in what, college football?
Yeah.
Because of what he does in the offseason and recruiting. And you got to believe that he's got the right guys in there that can step in place for a Tate Rattledge, and you won't miss much. You're always going to miss something with a starter, especially one of his pedigree, but you don't want to. You're not losing as much as a lot of teams would from first to second.
I completely agree, and here's you know what I'll finish the segment with. I can sit here and talk, and I've done this all week on a number of different platforms. You can talk about what Georgia may or may not have in the passing game, at the receiver position, at the skill position. Everything they're dealing with, Bama's secondary is dealing with, and some. They're playing freshmen at corner. They lost, you know, Caleb Downs. They lost Kool-Aid McKinstry. They lost Terrion Arnold. They lost all those guys as well. So it's a completely different matchup, and they are going to have their issues in this game as well. It's one of the reasons that Nick Saban did not pick Alabama to win the SEC was that secondary and the questions they have.
Well, you've heard of strength against strength. I guess this will be weakness on weakness.
There you go.
All right, going to come back. Top of the hour. The Falcon Killer will be playing on Sunday. That and more next on The Morning Shift. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, by the way, America's largest injury law firm. You want me to get a zero res in there, too? A smart, lasting, clean? Let's do it all. Let's celebrate them all. The Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 929 The Game.